Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald.
Coming up, as the Tory leadership race is cut down to the final two, we'll discuss whether Kemi Badenoch and Robert Jenrick are a gift to the Labour Party, or if the Tories are getting back on track.
We'll also look ahead to Saturday as Labour reach 100 days in office and ask if they've met your expectations so far.
As always, you can find us at Politics Uncensored UK on social media. All that and more coming up later in the programme.
But first, it's the Week Unwrapped.
Look, I am just delighted to have got so much support from parliamentary colleagues today and now to be through to the next round and taking my message to the members again across the country. And that's exactly what I want to do. I've spent the summer setting out my vision for our party and our country, which is one of change. I want the party to once again occupy the common ground of British politics, which means fixing our NHS, finding ways to grow our economy, and yes, to secure our borders and control and reduce immigration. On each of these areas, I've got a real plan. I don't trade in platitudes. I have a plan as to how we provide serious, competent leadership for our party and ultimately for our country.
That was Robert Jenrick, who, along with Kemi Badenoch, will be the two candidates put to the Conservative Party membership in a vote, and one of whom will be the next leader of the party. He couldn't quite believe he'd made it this far, and frankly, neither did most journalists or commentators. James Cleverly, who was widely regarded as the favourite following the party's annual conference last week, was knocked out of the race in the final round of voting by MPs in a dramatic fashion. So, Conservative members now have a choice, Kemi Badenoch or Robert Jenrick. Both have leaned quite considerably to the right throughout their campaigns, presumably to appeal to voters that they perceive the party lost to reform at the last election. Ali, we're now down to the final two. People keep saying these candidates are a gift to Labour. Do you agree?
No, I'm in the vast minority. I think a lot of the common consensus was that James Cleverly would be the biggest danger to Keir Starmer, because he wouldn't be able to create what's that famous word of clear blue water between him and James Cleverly, and they could compete for the same space. I'm of a completely differing opinion, and that is, I actually think Sir Keir Starmer's biggest weakness is that he allows too frequently his political adversaries to set the stage in which the debate happens. And he allows, again, his opposing political side, he gives too much space to his opposing political side in the discourse. And my worry is that if Jenrick or Badenoch shift that political centre ground, if you will, considerably to the right, and if Starmer continues that, in essence, giving space to someone like Kemi or someone like Robert to shift that political centre stage further right, then at some point he hits a wall and they don't. And if they are able to frame the entire debate over the next few years on things like immigration, on things like Brexit, on things like crime on the streets, and if Keir does what he has always done, which is sort of concede space, and because his strategy all throughout the election was to not give too much space to the Conservatives to criticise him on things. So he agreed to their fiscal rules, for example. He's given space on immigration, on the boats and on other things. So I am actually really worried about this. Despite everyone else saying this is a great news for Labour, I don't think it is. I think if Keir continues his strategy that he's always done, which is allowing them to kind of set the scene, I think he's in big trouble.
Who do you think would be more risky for Starmer?
Jenrick.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Why?
How do I say this without, like...
I think you just say it.
A black woman amongst Tory voters, I think, is a problem, and she won't get elected.
But if the membership choose her, is that not an indication that actually that doesn't really matter anymore?
Possibly. I hope so. Look, I hope I'm wrong, by the way. But given some of the polling that's come out about Conservative Party membership, certainly with Islamophobia, then you would think that they would be hesitant to elect Kemi Badenoch. In terms of, she's also more gaffe prone, which I think, and she, I think I saw someone say that she finds herself often go down the sort of the rabbit hole of online right wing commentary, and she gets lost there, which I think is partially true. Though I think she's a better orator than he is. She's a better media performer than he is. She comes across slightly more authentic than he does. But I think Jenrick is probably just a little bit more of a threat to Starmer. Mm. They're both threats, though. I think, to be honest, if as a Labour Party person, someone who votes Labour, who works within like in the Labour circles, I would have picked James Cleverly to beat, essentially, which is completely contrary to what everyone else is saying.
I do disagree with you, and I think that's actually good, because sometimes we tend to be in too much agreement and, you know, rather stifles the conversation. I actually think Jenrick is a whole load of nothing. I think he's like just, I keep wanting to say flaccid, but that sounds so rude. He's just like nothingy, and he flip-flops from one opinion to the other. He plays to the right, he plays to the left. You know, he was Sunak's right-hand man. He was literally brought into the role to keep an eye on Suella Braverman, and then he flip-flopped out of it. And, you know, people say, oh, that's evidence of his principles. No, it's not. He saw the ship was going down and he thought, I've got a shot at Tory leader.
Yeah.
Badenoch, I
think... that's where Badenoch has the edge on him.
Yes.
Is in that she's actually authentically right-wing.
I think Badenoch, on the other hand, I agree with you. I do think she's gaffe-prone. I think she would say things that would actually put off a lot of potential swing Tory voters. The thing I just think is so foolish about this is that they're concentrating so much on reform when actually they've lost a hell of a lot of seats to the Lib Dems and to Labour. And actually there were loads of Tory voters who were quite moderate, you know, who loved David Cameron, who likes the sort of coalition years. And now they have also disappeared into the camps of the Lib Dems and the Labour Party. You know, Conservatives have always won when they've struggled the centre ground.
That's true. That is true. The issue is that the reason that I think that wouldn't have worked is because that center, that ground, that sort of center, center right ground, I now think is firmly Keir Starmer's ground. And in that sense, where some people say Keir Starmer may have struggled in creating clear blue water between him and James Cleverly, equally, James Cleverly would have struggled to create clear blue water between himself and Keir Starmer. And possessions is nine-tenths of the law. Keir Starmer is the existing prime minister and has access to being able to do things to essentially prove his competency in the role. My fear is, look, that to be honest, if it was any other Labour prime minister, I would completely agree with you. My worry is Starmer's tendencies to essentially try and camp his tanks on opponents' lawns and being able to, you know, agree to the fiscal rules and all that kind of stuff worries me, because Jenrick and Badenoch will both attempt to shift it radically to the right. And Starmer can only do that up to a point where his own PLP, his own membership, put a wall up and go, that's enough. And that's where I think he'll have some problems. But on Jenrick, I think I agree with you on that. I saw someone refer to him as if it was as if a right-wing sort of Tory leadership was AI-created. And he does kind of look like an AI-generated candidate.
I saw someone say he looked like the fourth henchman, you know, just in any kind of book or film. He just so
who do you think's going to win?
I don't know. Don't ask me. Don't know. Jenrick?
I think so. I think it'll be Jenrick. Also, the other question I want to ask you is whether you've heard... I mean, look, Cleverly being knocked out as a surprise because he topped the previous ballot, and there's all sorts of rumours that they lent votes around to try and stop Kemi Badenoch from getting on and then they overdid that. I don't know how much true
that is. I
think
that is true. I think they're not very clever.
And
they were lending votes,
But what a colossal gaffe, if that's true.
Well, look, we're going to talk more about this later on in the programme. So let's, you know, there's tons more we can say. But let's, for the moment, get back to Labour. So earlier this week, Sue Gray quit her role as Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer's Chief of Staff, saying she, quote, risked becoming a distraction. She's been caught up in rows over pay after the BBC revealed her salary was higher than Sir Keir's amid a row about donations from Lord Waheed Ali. A Downing Street spokeswoman confirmed Miss Gray, who had become a household name as the investigator into Boris Johnson's Partygate fiasco, was taking up a new role as the Prime Minister's envoy for nations and regions. Labour said Miss Gray would be replaced by Morgan McSweeney, who was previously chief advisor to the Prime Minister and masterminded Labour's general election campaign. Ali, much has been made about the controversy surrounding Gray and her position. Do you think it was the right decision for her to go?
I absolutely do not. I'll tell you why in terms of Sue and my experience having worked with Sue and engaged with her. But from a political perspective, what this has done is admitted defeat in that the first 100 days have been a colossal failure. You do not change your chief of staff if you are happy with the direction that the government is going, if you are happy with the level of control you have over the civil service and over the rest of the cabinet. So in essence, I think moving her on, even if you're dissatisfied with the job that she's doing, I would have waited till the summer, because all you've done now, as the Tories are getting ready to elect their next leader, is admitted that the first 100 days have gone to shit. And I wouldn't have done it in the first 100, even if you're dissatisfied with it. So that's one element. The political element, I think, optically, and the message it sends to the media, to the PLP and others, is that it's all not gone well. And I think that's a mistake. My experience with Sue is actually she's extremely competent. She's delivery focused. She has an immense amount of experience in the civil service. So I cannot imagine, knowing Sue, having spoken to people around Number 10 and people in Number 10, I cannot imagine that Sue was the problem. There are two types of people that currently work in Number 10. And most people will know this. Anyone who denies this is BSing you. There are the factional people who are the hyper-political, really like want to kick the left in the Labour Party and stop the Tories from coming back. That sort of hyper-political factional thing. You need the hyper-political stuff. I'm not sure you need the factional stuff, but you need those in Number 10. And then you have the delivery-focused people, the people who want to take the ideas that you have and actually turn the machinations of the state into delivering your ideas. Sue Gray was firmly in the delivery element. Morgan McSweeney is undeniably firmly in the political camp. I think your chief of staff needs to be delivery focused, because they need to take these ideas that you've got with the experience of the civil service and the machinations of the state and go, I can turn these into a reality. Putting someone who's hyper political in that space, I think, is going to fail.
Are you worried then? Yeah. Are you worried then that Morgan McSweeney is going to actually, now in the chief of staff role, is actually going to be a hindrance to Starmer?
I tell you what my worry is. The Labour Party's biggest weakness has been talking to itself. Our internal factional fights, we're constantly fighting each other. The left has this problem everywhere in the world, by the way, constantly fighting each other. My worry with Morgan McSweeney, given that everyone knows he's been hyper-factional and hyper-political, is that we get sidetracked and the next 100 days all become about fighting people like John McDonnell and Zara Sultana and Jeremy Corbyn, for example, rather than delivering on the issues that matter. I hope he proves me wrong. They definitely need to get to grips with some of the political elements and the narratives and the media. But I just think the chief of staff just has to be someone who's delivery focused. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of do agree with you. I mean, I think because she had this civil service experience, it was quite helpful to have her in that role, and it was quite a good sign that Labour were really focused on delivery, which they say is like the absolute font of what they're trying to do. McSweeney is interesting because obviously he is this sort of political minded person. He's quite divisive, and you know, you either see him as the person who propelled Labour into Downing Street or the vandal of the party, depending on kind of which side of the fence you sit. And sometimes those people aren't great at the sort of actually getting on with the job element, which I think is basically what you're saying. I think it's worth pointing out that we said that Sue Gray, she's now been parachuted into a new role. She's going to be the Prime Minister's envoy to the nations and regions.
What does that mean?
Well, exactly. But it's also just been said now, it's being reported that she will not attend the inaugural meeting of the Council of Nations and Regions. She's taking a break, and it's unclear if she will ever start the role. So you get a feeling that this isn't a particularly ceremonious and positive departure.
Yeah. I mean, look, for 100 days, all we've heard is that there's a row between Sue Gray. There's a sort of power struggle between Sue Gray and Morgan McSweeney in Number 10. And clearly Morgan's won that battle.
There's rumours, and there's been talk for a while about, you know, I've heard these rumours from various people inside the Labour Party way before Keir Starmer ever got into Downing Street, that there is a problem with a boys' club surrounding him, and that a lot of these briefings, or supposedly these briefings about Sue Gray, were coming from a faction of men who didn't like her. And potentially there is something sexist about it. What do you think of that?
I've heard that firsthand, not from Sue, but I've heard that firsthand from women who've worked in those sort of environments, that often there is a sort of a group of men, a boys club that always seem to win the arguments at the time in Lotto, the leader of the opposition's office, and now Number 10. I've heard that as a firsthand account. Now, I don't work there, so I can't state it. And I actually think you wrote a brilliant article talking about some of the problems in the way the media reports on these sort of things, which I think is absolutely true. As always, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. I certainly think a boys' club does exist, not just at number 10, but in Westminster and in our politics as a whole. That is certainly true. But I also think the way that the media are reporting it is also overblown, because there are a lot of very powerful, very competent, very important women involved in the project that have had a central role in the success. So, like you said, people always talk about Morgan McSweeney as being sort of propelling Labour into number 10, but there are a lot of women that have been involved in that don't equally get the same sort of PR that someone like him will.
And quickly, before we go to our break, do you think that Gray, now she's gone, Labour are going to be able to get back on track and to get rid of some of this kind of counter-briefing coming up number 10?
No, because I don't think she was ever the problem. I don't think... Look, the problem... What has Labour been hit with in the first 100 days? There are two principal things that have damaged Labour and have caused the... what is only that I can describe as a plane like in free fall in terms of polling has been the riots on our streets that they were hit with immediately, and the donations scandal, the freebie scandal. Well, Sue Gray doesn't really have anything to do with that, right? So I think what Labour needs to do, and I said this at conference, funnily enough, is been incapable of leaning on some of the wins, like ending the NHS junior doctor strike, which is a huge win that Labour should be shouting about. Instead, we're talking about the freebies. So I actually think I wouldn't be looking at the chief of staff. I'd be looking at the head of comms, the head of press, that sort of directorate role. That's where the problem is.
Okie doke. Very interesting. Okay, well, that is the week unwrapped. Coming up, Saturday marks 100 days since Labour gained power. We'll assess the good, the bad and the ugly. Just how well are they getting on? That's
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald. Fubar Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me. And I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You wanna go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Follow us at Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald. Now, Saturday marks 100 days since Labour won the general election. But how have those 100 days gone? Well, joining us on the programme to discuss this is Matthew Torbett, writer, broadcaster and former Labour advisor. Thank you for joining us, Matthew. How would you mark the first 100 days out of 10?
Put me on the spot, why don't you? Out of 10, 5. Must try harder.
Fair enough.
Matthew, Sally here. Why the 5? Because, you know, like me, you'd probably have been more hopeful. So that 5 is probably more of a disappointment coming from someone like you or someone from like me than someone who's more politically neutral or maybe even sits on the opposing side. What's delve behind what's behind that 5?
I think if we take the positives, we won the general election. That's always a positive rather than losing. We're in the Labour Party very, very used to losing general elections. I think there's good things to take through nationalising the railways, which was a manifesto commitment. I think there's also, I'm hopeful of good things to come from the employment bill after the white paper was published today and putting an end to things like fire and rehire. But I think nobody can get away from the sort of lack of summer budget, which, or even a sort of lack of a mini summer budget, which has allowed a vacuum to be filled by, in a way, nonsensical stories that are almost like unforced errors that people around the people in Number 10 or otherwise should have seen coming and maybe not have put their foot in it in the first place.
Matt, do you think that Labour have told a convincing enough story about what the country is going to look like in 1 year's time, 5 years' time, 10 years' time? I mean, do you think that is part of it? Because listening to Keir Starmer's speech, it feels at Labour Party conference, it feels very similar to what he was saying. He's been saying, you know, for the last 18 months. Do you think part of the problem is that people don't have a sense of what it is the Labour government is going to achieve?
Yeah, I think we saw that in focus groups leading up to the election, sort of 18 months out from it, where people would be asked, what do you think Labour stands for? And people couldn't really describe it. It's unfortunate here, Keir Starmer isn't the most articulate orator, and he never will be. That's not within his skill set. So therefore, I don't know if he's got that within him to paint that picture. I think also he just comes out with things that normal people don't say, describing the riots over the summer as far-right thuggery. I've never heard any normal person outside of PG Woodhouse calling things thuggery. What we've heard is the idea around a decade of renewal. And I think that's sort of obviously laying the groundwork for the fact of, you know, this is going to take time and you're trying to get people's patience for that, which, you know, voters aren't stereotypically very patient. I think also that's been undermined by him coming out and saying things are going to get worse for a little bit. I think you need to give people hope, not necessarily misguided hope, but there are brighter things ahead and not the I assume the George Osborne tactic of saying the last Tory government, the last Labour government, etc. I think after 14 years, the public hasn't got the patience for that tactic.
Do you think that doom and gloom is part of the problem? Because, look, everybody walked into that polling booth on July 4th, probably with most people with like a negative view of the last 14 years or the last government. And they'd hoped that a change in government would be a sort of switch of into a more hopeful, prosperous future. And then all that they've heard since then is doom and gloom. Is that part of the problem?
I would say so. Mostly because, you know, anyone that was out on the doorstep for Labour during the general election, as I was, there was no love for Labour. There was a lot of anti-Tory rhetoric and people were fed up with the government we've got and therefore were hoping there would be some sort of change because they didn't necessarily vote for Labour. They just voted against Tory. Yeah.
Also, Labour got like 33% of the vote and 411 MPs. So that tells you all you need to know.
Well, quite. And I think because of that, people don't necessarily like you anyway. I think Keir Starmer's, you know, high benchmark was probably during the Brexit era. And obviously, a lot of people liked him for his trying to push a second referendum and stuff like that. I think other than that, he's not always been very likeable in the public eye. And I think because of that, people have probably lent you their vote. So you need to show them that it was worth lending them that vote for. Whereas what you've done is you've gone, yeah, sorry, guys. It almost actually, in a weird way, reminded me of sort of Homer Simpson in The Simpsons turning up at the nuclear power plant going, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm doing. This sort of thing of it's worse than we could ever imagine. You know, it's almost comical at times. So, yeah, I don't think that helps. And people feel, I think, politically homeless and lost at the moment. You need to be giving them hope at a time like this.
Matt, before the break, we were talking about Sue Gray and her departure. And I wonder, you know, that there's a tendency in Westminster for stories that are actually quite Westminster bubbly for us to kind of overstate them. And, you know, this isn't an elected politician. This is the Prime Minister's chief of staff leaving. And it is definitely unprecedented for them to leave before the 100-day mark. But do you think this is the sort of story that resonates with voters and undermines the Labour government, or do you think this will be forgotten about in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it'd be largely forgotten about personally. I think I'll be going to the England game later tonight. I'll guarantee nobody will be moaning about Sue Gray, they'll be moaning about Keir Starmer. Same way they won't have a clue who Morgan McSweeney is. And over the last 100 days, I've not heard anybody talk about Sue Gray other than the people that are in the world we're in. So the book stops with him in that sense. And I think, you know, Sue Gray will fade into the background as she already was in lots of general public voters' minds.
And if I can just jump in again on the freebies stuff, because that's been the other big story that's kind of been dominating Westminster. What is your sense of how people are reacting to this? I mean, do you think this is something that's going to carry on? It feels like the media wants it to carry on. Do you think it's resonating with people at home?
Yes, I can tell you that. Anywhere I go, up and down the country, seeing friends and family or going to the football, the two things that have cut through is the winter fuel allowance. That is in no way a Westminster bubble story. As soon as you tell people what you do or what you did, people go, oh, yeah, they're freezing the pensioners. Yeah, no, it's disgusting, really. And that, unfortunately, will tie into the freebies sort of stuff because it's a bit one rule for them, one rule for us. And I think part of it's a little bit of class consciousness that the Labour Party hasn't currently got, because working class people historically have to live within their means. They don't get the opportunity of things like freebies. And there's almost like this thing within the people within the Labour Party where, well, we're allowed to do things like this because we're responsible adults and the grown-ups in the room as such. And I think people, well, certainly it's annoyed most people I know, and you open yourself up to the charge of hypocrisy when you're basically seen by Joe Public to be accepting, you know, £150,000 worth of freebies, or they may see it as 150 grand, but you're freezing their nan this winter. So unfortunately, they've tied themselves in a bit of a knot with that sort of stuff.
And isn't that, this is my biggest worry, if I'm honest, in that people say the election is really, really far away and there's still a chance to change people's minds or to define yourself in the next sort of 4 years. The worry that I have is exactly what you're saying, in that when people make up their mind about you, it's very hard to then change it. I think Rishi Sunak learned that more than anyone, where everyone had made up their minds about the Tories and there is nothing he could have come to overcome that. And I worry that if Keir Starmer is seen as another one of those sort of sleazy politicians, those corrupt politicians who take money from the likes of Google and Apple and all this kind of stuff and sit in the big boxes but take away and freeze your nan, that could define him for an entire 4 years, could it not?
Yeah, and that's my fear. As I said earlier, I don't think the public has patience for it at the moment. My fear is that this becomes terminal, and because people may well have made their minds up early, I think there's a tactic to get the bad stuff out the way early, but if the rot sets in, I mean, I will say with no sense of melodrama whatsoever that if Keir Starmer remains Prime Minister in 4 years, we won't win the next election. And I've never thought we would win the next election because someone who I don't quote very often, Tony Blair, predicted Keir Starmer before he was even in politics. He wrote in his book in 2008 that he identified as Labour leader three strands of Labour. He said there was traditional Labour, which would never win. That would be your sort of Jeremy Corbyn socialism Labour that hasn't won as of yet. He identified modern Labour, which he was a fan of and thought would win and win again. But there is a third strand, which Tony Blair called plain Labour, which would win, but wouldn't win again, because it would only win because of an unpopular Conservative government. Now, if that isn't the current Labour government, I don't know what is.
Can I ask you a follow-up question on that? Given that and the anxieties that I know exists within the PLP now, I know it's not going to happen for a while, but what are the likelihoods, based on your experience, that there could be moves against Keir Starmer in government?
2 years. I think there's a multitude of things, but to go very briefly, there are ambitious people within that cabinet, as we all know. I think it may end up in a bit of a Joe Biden situation where if somebody within that cabinet goes, Keir, you've done so well, turned it all around 5 years ago, but if you stay leader, we're not going to win. Mm-hmm. And actually a younger face may do it. So if you do the selfless thing and step away, we may have a chance and you'll be a hero forever in the Labour movement. I think also you've got a lot of MPs on quite small majorities where Reform are chomping at their bit. 99 seats, they came second in at the general election. MPs will begin to move when they're worried about their own income, which, you know, is we've seen with the Tories over the years. So I think the halfway point, especially if we perform badly, first of all, in the locals, which is quite a high bar for the Tories, they're mostly Tory councils. But the big test will be Scotland and Wales the year after. And if we're not doing well in areas where we traditionally always did so, then it's going to look like it's potentially terminal.
And Matt, I'm going to ask you a final question. Now you're no longer a Labour advisor. You can put your cards on the table. Who's going to be the next leader of the Labour Party?
Oh, I tell you what, I don't have to worry about going in work now saying this sort of stuff. I think Rachel Reeves, everyone saw at conference, was clearly on leadership manoeuvres. We heard all about her backstory, very little to do with the economics. But I think at the moment from MPs who I talk to, that West Streeting is currently edging it in that race. There's a lot of talk about Bridget Phillipson, but Bridget is very loyal to Rachel as she helped her out when she wanted a better job after Keir's first sort of shadow cabinet. And she ended up, Rachel helped her and she's very loyal to her. So I think it'll be Wes or Rachel, and it'll likely be Wes at this point in time.
Okie doke. Well, thank you very much. That was brilliant. That was Matt Torbit, writer, broadcaster and former Labour advisor.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Okay, Ali, we just heard from Matthew there. You're our resident Labour man. Would you agree with what he said? Any disagreements? Do you think he's right about Labour's first 100 days in power?
Yeah, 5 was generous, but...
I'd give him a 6, you know.
So here's the thing. We actually spoke about this off air. I would differentiate between what Labour has done in government. Some of the legislative stuff, like he said, on renationalisation, really good. Ending the NHS junior doctor strike, really good. The public sector pay increases, really good. On that stuff, I would maybe give them a 5 or a 6. Political comms, I would give them a -6, right? Because
the, so it levels out as actually 0.
The media management has been as poor as anything I've ever seen. So... on that, the one bit, I actually agreed a lot with Matthew. Funnily enough, I don't think we come from the same political wings of the party, but his assessment of what's happened and what's going on, I would 100% agree with, and I think is pretty consistent with the noises in Number 10 and Whitehall. The one bit I would disagree with is if Rachel Reeves becomes leader of the Labour Party, I will come live on the show and eat my right shoe.
Okay,
it will never
just
happen.
Checking that the producers are clipping that up so that we can play it back at another time.
Just
brilliant.
Because
I actually think it could be Rachel Reeves.
She is the worst political communicator I have ever seen in my entire life.
But she has good name recognition and people... Well, it all depends, right? A Chancellor can make or break their reputation. Like, the whole reason Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister was because of Eat Out to Help Out, basically.
Yeah. Dishy Rishi.
And I don't think she's going to bring anything like that in, in the budget, unfortunately. I thought there was a lot of really interesting stuff in that. I mean, the chat about reform and how reform could spook Labour. I remember not so long ago I was writing a piece about how reform would never take Labour voters. And I spoke to some quite senior people within the Labour Party for some comment, and they were like, we're not wasting our time on talking about reform. They're like no threat to us and we're not bothered. And I wonder if that still sticks.
Well, I've never been convinced about reform, but did you see the advert they put out this week? Sort of AI generated. So
I heard about it, but I didn't watch it.
You didn't miss much. So they've put out this really scary AI generated Labour the movie. First of all, the advert sucks, and it's kind of a scary indication of where we're going with AI generating political content. But more than that, the interesting part wasn't actually what was in the advert, but the advert itself, in that Reform are clearly going after Labour voters. And they have made the assessment internally that, that Labour voters are up for grabs for them, and that's interesting.
And, you know, that was always their plan. Richard Tice said, phase one, go for the Tories, take the Tory votes. Phase two, go for Labour voters. And I think things like the winter fuel allowance, that is a perfect policy for Reform to go after Labour.
And it is having cut through. That's the interesting part. And I, what Matthew said there is really, really interesting. I had dinner with one of my friends who lives up north, who I don't get to see often, on the third day of Labour Party conference. And when I asked him what his thoughts were and what his family was saying, he said, listen, on the two things, the freebies and the winter fuel allowance, just like Matthew said, he said, normal folk are talking about it. I hear about it in the local shops. I hear about it at work. That has nothing to do with politics. And that is a terminal problem for any government when, quote unquote, normal people are talking about your problems.
Okay, so just going to go back to the leader thing, because I love asking people this. So you think it's going to be Rachel Reeves? Do you think it could be Wes Streeting?
It could definitely be Wes.
Do you think Wes Streeting would orchestrate, or you know, if there was a move against Keir Starmer, you really think Wes Streeting, who is quite loyal to Keir Starmer, would jump in?
Yeah, look, when the leader is on the edge of the mountain, the problem with politics is there are no friends, and they're highly ambitious people, like Matthew said. And yes, any number of them will push, not just Wes, but any number of them will push Keir if they thought they could take that space. I think Wes is far more likely to get it. I genuinely, I'm 100% sure it will never be Rachel. I think the likelihood is you'll have someone like Angela, you'll have someone like Wes, you'll potentially, you'll have someone from the softer left. Maybe Angela would be that person.
Lisa Nandy.
Lisa Nandy would definitely go for it. She won't win though. But like an Andy Burnham figure, even though he's not in the PLP. But I think it's still very early days. Look, does Keir Starmer have the ability to turn it around? He does. But what I think he needs to not focus on is like the chief of staff element, the technical element. He needs to work on the comms. The comms are atrocious.
Okie doke. Well, coming up, we'll get more on the Conservative leadership race. Are the final two a gift for Labour, or have the Tories finally turned a corner? All that and more next.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. The Fubar Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me. And I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go, you go there.
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald. Okay, let's get back, do we have to the Tory leadership race. It's Robert Jenrick versus Kemi Badenoch following James Cleverly's elimination yesterday afternoon. I still can't believe I'm reading that sentence out. Okay, we spoke about this earlier, Ali, but we should get into it a bit more. Are the Tories onto something with these two?
No, they're not. Look, can I? I'm going to have a rant, if that's okay.
Yeah, no, go
if that's
it.
Okay with you.
I'll close my eyes, go.
I'm really dismayed at the state of British democracy. And democracy is being very kind to the systems that we have, because all I'm hearing is these deals that are being done between Cleverly and keeping people off the ballots and Robert Jenrick lending people votes to make sure that Tom Tugendhat doesn't get on the ballot. And so ultimately a group of, 190 people or whatever, how many is in that Conservative Parliamentary Party, decides the final two that goes in front of their membership and becomes the next leader of one of the major parties of our state. And then you look at that, and equally on the other side, you hear of all the noises about the Labour Party stitching up their leadership election rules about who can be their leader and whether the PLP can solely get a say in government as to who their leadership is. And you look at both and you go, the two major parties of our state are both crooked in the way that they choose their leadership candidates. And then on top of that, you have the first-past-the-post system, which even the biggest supporter of it would say has huge flaws in it. And you just kind of throw up your hands when you say, okay, the leaders of these great parties, the way that they're selected is crooked. And then when it comes to a general election, our system as a whole has massive flaws in it. So what's the point of all of it? And it really frustrates me, because I think our democracy, you know, we look at our parliament as the mother of all parliaments, and we think of ourselves as sort of leading light around the world in terms of our democracy. And our system, from the very top of a general election down to how MPs and leaders are selected, is just as corrupt and as crooked as it gets.
What is a good system then? Because I agree with you, but when I think about it, it's like thinking about like how space works. I'm like, I get so twisted and my head turns, because I'm just like, there's so many things wrong with every system.
Yeah,
there's so many rabbit holes that you go down where you think this system might work, or actually we've never even considered that, you know.
Yeah.
And I just was listening to a debate yesterday about whether or not they should reverse how the Tory leadership leader is selected, so that actually it's members who whittle down a list and then MPs pick. But that didn't sound perfect either.
No, I think what we have to be careful of is to not let perfect be the enemy of good. We're not going to get a perfect system. But what we can't have is prime ministers. Because remember, we've had three or four prime ministers picked in office from the Conservative side, right? We can't have the leaders of our country determined by 100-something people in Parliament. That just can't happen. And then we can't have a general election. I'm sorry, as happy as I am that my side won, we cannot have a general election in which 2/3 of Parliament are elected on 33% of the vote. That is not democracy, right? And then on the other side, we have the Labour Party leadership who are thinking about changing the rules of the leadership in government so no one else gets a say. There is no perfect system, but there are certainly better systems than this, because the reality is the votes of an individual voter around the country mean less and less and less every time they go to a voting booth. And I think it is a huge problem. It's more important than any individual policy. It's more important than any individual political leader. It's more important than any political party, the health of our democracy. And I don't think enough people are talking about it. I mean, just how wild is it that we are now down to two pretty right-wing Conservative Party leadership candidates, because if the rumours are to be believed, the electorate, being the Conservative Party, parliamentary party, are so
incompetent
that
they accidentally blocked their favourite candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not great. I will admit that.
Also, what does that say about just the entire health of the Conservative Party.
Well, precisely. I mean, I think it tells you a lot about how divided this party is. I mean, I'm, you know, of the opinion that it's actually just time to burn the Conservative Party down to the ground and just see what takes root beneath. I mean, if I were a moderate Conservative at this point, I'd be eyeing up the Lib Dems.
Yeah.
I'd have a better chance of keeping my seat.
It's sort of that thing of, who was it? They haven't learned their lesson.
Hmm.
That's certainly part of the problem. I just don't know why they can't just go to an all members vote from the beginning. Why? Like,
but what, with a shortlist?
No, just whoever puts themselves forward. Maybe you have maybe you have a system where you need a certain amount of MPs like Labour do to get onto the ballot. Even that I'm dubious of. Mm. Honestly, my big belief, I worked in an American system where people's votes was ultimately what mattered.
Mm.
I mean, you don't even have to be a member of the party in America. You just have to be registered as a Democrat, for example, to vote. The best indicator of whether you can win a general election is whether you can win a electorate within your own party. Mm. That's the best system. Mm. You don't need to win over MPs, for example. In fact, in terms of selecting leaders of the party, the MPs are the ones I least care about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there is an argument that you have to be able to manage your PLP or your CLP, but your Conservative Party, parliamentary party. But that's my rant over.
I'm going to put something to you. It doesn't really matter who becomes Tory leader now, because they're not going to be Tory leader at the time of the next general election.
Yeah. So what's funny is I would have said no to that 5 years ago, because the Conservatives have been trigger hesitant. In the past, they're not the type to be sort of trigger happy and sack them off, but that's certainly not been the case with the three or four prime ministers that we had in government. I think it's definitely a possibility. Although my worry is how poorly Labour are doing.
I mean, the reason I think this is going to be that neither Jenrick nor Badenoch can unite the party is the issue of the ECHR, right?
Yeah,
they both have indicated they are prepared to leave the ECHR, and that will not wash with One Nation Tories. There are a number of One Nation Tories in the party who simply would not countenance the ECHR. I mean, it kind of actually represents everything that they stand for, you know, that the UK is the arbiter of like rule and order. And I feel like with reform pushing, as you said earlier about the space and the space they take up, if they are taking up the space that reform already occupies, Reform are going to push the conversation on, and it's going to become about leaving the ECHR to get a handle on immigration.
Yeah, if they become obsessed with reform votes, as both Jenrick and Kemi will be.
I think it's going to be the next and final splinter in the Conservative Party, like Brexit, that just completely divides the party forever.
You know, ultimately, we keep coming back to this issue, and I think I said it on maybe like the second show I ever did on FUBAR, which is the reality is that the Labour Party and the Conservative Party aren't two parties, they're four parties. Mm. There's the left of Labour and the more moderate side of Labour, the sort of the Blairites and the Corbynites. And in the Conservative Party, you have One Nation David Cameron's and you have right-wing Robert Jenrick's, for example. These parties should be four parties. They shouldn't be two parties. And as four parties, they would operate in permanent coalitions, most likely. But eventually, we're going to see a splinter. There's no doubt about that in my mind. In my lifetime, there are going to be the Labour Party will split in half and the Conservative Party will split in half. The question is just how long they can withstand it for. And I think I think you're absolutely right. Actually, that splinter from the Conservative side could definitely come in the next 2-3 years.
Mm. What do you think the Tories need to do to get back on top?
I think they need a good communicator as the leader of the party. And I think they'll struggle with both Jenrick and Kemi. Kemi's slightly better, but they need a good communicator. They need a clear vision. They need someone who's able to unite their party in its focus of what it's going to go after Labour for. I think they need to focus not on reform, but on the votes they lost to the Liberal Democrats.
Mm.
If they, in that sense, actually, I'm kind of convincing myself into James Cleverly, so maybe I agree with you. So in that sense, James Cleverly probably would have done the best job in delivering that.
I feel like they need, sorry to interrupt, I'm just thinking out loud. I feel like they need a core issue. So it's kind of like what you're saying. You're right, they moved to the centre, Labour's got their tanks parked on their ground. They moved to the right, Reform's got their tanks parked. Mm-hmm. Both of them have taken a lot of votes off the party and splintered it. They almost need a core issue that neither party is really prepared or can't look at or don't want to. And I wonder if it's something to do with becoming the party of business again. You know, yeah. Labour's going to work on all this worker stuff. I think that's going to become a tension. They obviously have a relationship with the unions. Reform, by virtue of trying to be this popular party, being this party of the people, they can't really be too in the pockets of business. Plus, a lot of the stuff they say is just nonsense. So, like, you know, business won't hold on to it. But I think there's something about the Tories taking on, occupying that space of being, you know, the environment of low tax, of good, of low business regulation. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I've always thought the Conservative Party strength, and actually we heard this from the Tory voice on the show 2 weeks ago, I think, or maybe last week. The Tories' biggest strength has been party of competence, in that the general public, even if they disagree with what the Tories have done, has always thought the Tories are a safe pair of hands for the economy, and mostly on security. That's where I think they need to go back
security,
to. And to be honest, they could do that with business being the core sort of issue. The way that they win is by standing back and saying, look, Labour has set fire to everything, right? Try and cause as much division in the party, in the Labour Party, as much as they can, and to define themselves as the party of safe competence for the country. And I think that way, people tend to actually overlook things that they fundamentally disagree with the Conservative Party on. If you look at any level of polling, most of this country believe in high levels of investment in the NHS, high level of investment in public services, higher taxes for the rich. The polling suggests the general public overwhelmingly agree on these issues. Renationalisation, for example, highly agree. But they're willing to overlook some of that stuff based on safety, security, and competency. I don't want to have to worry about what the government is doing, right, or how corrupt the government is, as long as they run the country competently. If they can get back to that, I think they can cause Labour serious problems. But neither of these two leaders will do that.
And while I agree with you, you know, it's almost like they've handed Labour the exact thing that Labour handed.
You know what?
Cameron,
I've come on a journey on the show. I
know,
I agree with
it's
you
good.
Now.
Well, I'm very persuasive.
I think I agree with you.
But it's but it's almost like they've handed Labour the same thing that Labour handed them in 2010, which is there's no money left. That sort of economic incompetence that Labour was left with, the Tories have done the same thing. Liz Truss was so destructive. You look at the state of public services. I think you are right. They can sow some division by saying, look, we're just going to be the safe bet. But I think that's going to keep them out of power for a decade, because it's going to take 10 years for people to forget what Liz Truss did.
Well, yeah, I think people are over what Liz Truss did, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think they are.
No, I don't think it's Liz Truss that people are angry at. I think it's the I don't think the Conservatives were done by Liz Truss in the end.
No.
I think they were done by, it was like a thousand, death by a thousand cuts. There was too many Partygate, Liz Truss, all that kind of stuff, the COVID PPE scandal. I think essentially there was an avalanche of dissatisfaction, and then inflation and other things hit them. But I mean, perhaps you're right. It would take 10 years. The problem is, If Labour continue on the trajectory that they're going, they could do what the Conservatives, or we could do what the Conservatives did, which is lose the election. Labour didn't win the election on July 4th because the Conservatives lost it. And I worry the same thing could be true of Labour, that we don't win the election. We don't, they don't win the election next time out, that we lose it.
What's your prediction for Robert and Jenrick and Kemi Badenoch? How are they going to lead the party? What do you think their core issues are going to be?
I think Kemi Badenoch will lean heavily into culture wars. I think that's where she feels most confident. I think she will be an extremely gaffe-prone leader, but some of that will play in her favour. If she's smart, she kind of pitches herself as a straight-talking, what-people-are-thinking politician, and that she's probably the one that most likely to take reform votes back, and she can drive a wedge right into reform. Jenrick will be, I think, slightly more Brexity in that he'll focus on ECHR. He seems obsessed with immigration. That's all he ever talks about. And so out of those two, if I'm Starmer, I probably prefer Kemi. I think Jenrick will win it, though. What's interesting is there's talks about a one-on-one debate and whether that's going to happen. What about you? What's your prediction?
I think... yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think I agree with exactly what you said on both of them. I think the big issue for Labour then is going to be if they can start bringing immigration numbers down.
Yeah,
and
which they won't.
And which, you know, the Labour a lot of Labour voters won't like.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because that's the needle they can keep poking them with, right?
I mean, Keir Starmer's conference speech was interesting, is that there will be more migrants coming over, and if you want, I thought that was that was really interesting. Anyway, lots to think about, lots to keep our eyes on, and I'm sure as the weeks go ahead, then we're going to keep our eye on this leadership race and who's going to win. So do keep tuned. That's it from Politics Uncensored today. Join us next Thursday at 5 p.m. where we unwrap the week's political talking points. You can stay up to date with the show by following at Politics Uncensored UK on social media, where you can find me at Ali Milani UK.
And you can find me at Zoe underscore Grunewald.
If you missed any of today's show, you can go back and listen and catch up at FubarRadio.com. Thanks for listening. See you next week for another episode of Politics Uncensored.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald. Fubar Radio.